signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Let me sort of outline what our plan is for tonight and for a week from tonight. We have indicated for a long time that we will have the first opportunity to talk about the draft omnibus bill at this meeting. And we will not take any final votes on anything tonight, but we will do that. Take our final votes next Tuesday. We need to, first of all, hear some testimony of people who are unable, for one reason or another, to testify before us when a particular bill came up. And there are some folks on the deferred abilities augmentation issue and the Texan Township issue in particular, who were not able to be here or were not able to give testimony. And so we're going to give them an opportunity here right at the beginning to speak to those issues. Then our plan is to start walking through the bill article by article to have some discussion, get some indication as to issues in the article that the commission wants to address. If someone has some particular input that they would like to give with regard to that article, we will take that testimony at that time. I think it'd be better that we do that rather than having to hear all of the testimony to begin with and then try to remember that as we talk about individual articles. So, apart from those two groups of testifiers that we will take first, we will then take testimony as we need to go through, walking through the bill. And we will get through as many articles as we can tonight. We will adjourn at 7, as we've announced. But members, I want to forewarn everyone that next week we'll stay as long as we have to. I hope that we can get done by 7 or thereabouts next week. But that will be our last opportunity, and so we will plan to be here as long as we need to finish our work next week. And for members of the audience, our deadline as a committee is the 23rd of March, but because whatever bill we pass on this commission has to go through the appropriate Senate and House committees before that deadline. That's why we have to act on our bill by next Tuesday, the 13th. So, commission members, any question about the plan for tonight or next week? If not, let's turn to the folks who look at these people. All these people are here from out of town, and so we will take first the folks that wish to testify on behalf of the deferred abilities augmentation, Greg Miller and Jeff Heima. If they would please come forward and address the commission. Welcome to the commission, and please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
My name is Greg Miller, Virginia, Minnesota. And my name is Jeff Heima, from Winona, Minnesota. Employee 2005, I was contemplating leaving teaching and taking a job in the private sector. And that would have taken effect June 7th, roughly, when school got out in Virginia in 2005. In May of 2005, I called the TRA and asked what my pension would be at age 62, based on no further years of experience. And that was 24.62 service credits. At the time that I called, they told me that my monthly pension check at 62 years old would be $3,275 a month. And that would be for life, obviously. Based on that information, looking at my future earnings in the private sector, talking it over with my wife, a decision was made in May of 2005 to cease employment with the Virginia schools on June 7th, 2005, and take a job in the private sector. At the time that the deferred augmentation changed with the pension reform of 2010, up until that time, I should say, every TRA statement that I got in the mail or accessed on their website showed the same exact number that my pension would be at age 62. Once the deferred augmentation took place, or the changes were going in the pension reform, bill of 2010, starting in 2010, the fiscal year 2010, statement that I got from TRA started to reflect the new amount that my pension will be based on those changes to deferred augmentation. My new benefit at age 62 will be $2,596 a month for life. That is a reduction of $8,137 a year for life. If I have a 20-year life expectancy from age 62, obviously to age 82, for myself, that's a difference of $162,753. And that would be ongoing if I were to live longer than age 82. Based on the information that I received from TRA and other considerations that I used, not only did I make the decision to leave teaching and go into the private sector, I also made the second biggest decision that I ever made in my life, and that was to build a new house in 2008. And my wife and I decided, based on our future income, based on what our pensions may be, or would be at age 55 to 62, depending on when each of us were going to retire, we looked at the amounts that I had been given from GRE in 2008 as the basis for building our new house. Now, here we are, 4 years later, 2 years later, after we built our house, my pension goes down by $8,200 a year, and that's money I'm never going to recover. The decisions that I made can't be undone. I can't go back and build a house, and I can't go back and change my career path choice that I made in the year of 2005. So based on those two issues, specifically for myself, I just feel that that has been a burden that has been put on myself and my family after the fact, 5 years after I retired. I'm happy to hear that I should use the correct terminology. 5 years after I left employment, became an active member is when these changes came into effect and will affect me for the rest of my life. Retroactive changes in tax and pension, to my understanding, this is something that's done very often. And in this case, it has a catastrophic effect on myself. One thing that's rather unique, and again, if any commission members would like, I do have the documentation with me today. I have my different statements put throughout the years and the verified numbers. One thing that I've been noticing is rather problem for myself is if I were to take my pension at age 62 under the old formula, my pension would be almost $200 a month higher. And if I were to take my pension at age 65 under the new formula, I'm going to delay my pension by 3 years. And if I'm going to have less of a pension than I would have had at age 62 under the old formula costing, as I would have had at age 65 under the new formula. And actually, 1865, I gave the difference before 1862 for myself personally is about $8,200 a year for life. At 1865, that was up to $14,000 a year for life that my pension was able to use. So, again, I have all the materials if you want to see them. I'm asking you that you support House Bill 2411, and I would be more than happy to ask any questions that you may have on my specific GRA situation.
Any questions for Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Miller, when this legislation was being passed, one of the questions we have is when the bill was being drafted or being passed during that time, did you know of these changes? As I understand from the standing that there was a notice sent out giving information to you, I just wanted to check about your receiving that. And just
one
comment,
Mr. Speaker,
if you would, please.
Mr. Miller, Mr. Speaker, members of the question. I do recall in a postcard, being a postcard readers from 2010 until current, whether that specific postcard spelled out that there were any changes, I can't say yes or no to. I guess the point I'm making is, even had I seen the postcard and gone directly to the GRA website and noticed the changes, I still could not go back and do the late decisions that I made 5 years prior to that.
Okay, that's different, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. As a previously stated, my name is Jeff Palmer. My teaching story is slightly different. I taught for about 20 years, but in three different states, California, Wisconsin, and most recently in Minnesota. I taught for a little under 7 years in Minnesota, leaving teaching and going into the private sector in 2003. And so at the time, I too looked at things, looked forward, and the printouts from TRA that determined what I would be making, and I have a longer term view of this than Mr. Miller. And so I looked at 865, what would this mean, the TRA portion alone. The regular benefit would be $837.76 a month. That's what I assumed was the promise in 2003. Going forward, in 2009, I had the unfortunate circumstance of getting a divorce. The opposing attorney in the divorce case sought the information, the estimates of my benefits from TRA to factor into the divorce settlement. And so I have a copy of what he received, which I'm happy to share with you, and it showed the exact same thing in 2009 that I received in 2003. That I would receive $837.76 a month. With that was actuarially costed to my assets to hold on to that. You want to, if you will, to hold on to that piece of pension. I had to, out of other assets, pay for it in my divorce. If you do the costing, the difference between that amount from 2003 to 2009, and the amount after the 2010 bill was $208.35 less per month for a loss of about $2,500 per year. Now, the way it works in a divorce case is they take your average life expectancy, and that's the cost of the benefit. So in my divorce case, since it was assumed that I would live until age 76, the average age for a white male, second part that is a possibility is somewhat similar to Mr. Miller's. I assumed at age 65 that I could count on this. The new information that I'm getting is that it's going to be $837 to $76 a month that I would get $629.41, or again, about $2,500 a year less. So on top of the $27,500 that I've already lost, if I live to the life expectancy of 76, that would be another $27,500 that I would lose. If I live to the average age of my two male grandparents, which were about 84, that would be another $25,000. So my projected loss on this would be about $80,000, $27,500 that I've already lost. And then a proposed 52.50 if I live to age 84. That's the difference in my situation. Like Mr. Miller, it's disconcerting when you make a choice in 2003, it's revalidated, the amounts are revalidated 6 years later in 2009, and here we sit in 2012, and I'm facing a significant economic loss, and there's nothing I can do. I can't go back and undo any of these. I can't go back and tell them, and reconvene a divorce court and say, oh, by the way, things have changed. That money's gone. And so, in my mind, a promise is a promise. And I feel that money was given in 2003 when I left. I appreciate the idea of shared sacrifice. And I fully understand that, from age 65 going forward, I, like all other current retirees, would get the amount that is due. And I understand that. And so, shared sacrifice is fine. But this bill fixes an unintended but significant consequence for a small group of people, one of which you happen to be. The one other thing that I wanted to mention, still listening to the testimony of the last hearing, was that there was some discussion over when bonuses were set. Up until 2009, you got a paper notice that listed your benefits in the mail. The whole thing was listed. Starting from 2010, you received a postcard which simply said to check the website. I went on the website to check it to get my information straight for you today. And the only thing that's not available on the website now is the information from 2010 forward. So there's no, I found no way, when looking at my statements, to go back and compare the old promise to the new situation. That's very disconcerting for someone trying to sort out what's going on here. And so that's pretty much my story in a nutshell. We do have a brief statement that I would like to read from a friend who is in is affected by the same circumstance. Hers is a little bit different than either Mr. Miller's or I. So I'd be happy to read that, or I'd be happy to pause for questions in regards to my situation, whichever you prefer.
Any questions from the commission members? Any material you want to leave with us, we'd be happy to receive it.
Okay, well, I've got my statement. I've got hers. It's less than a page. If I could just briefly, it covers a piece that I think is very important that we haven't talked about here.
Okay.
If that would be okay, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll just read it verbatim. And this is from Randy Kirchner of Rochester, Minnesota. And this is her TR story. She says, I took a leave, a 5-year leave of absence from teaching and took advantage of the opportunity to buy my TRA service credit for 5 years, from 2003 to 2008. Why did I do this? I talked with several TRA representatives at the time, each of them was so knowledgeable and took the time to fully explain the options available to me and gave me the estimated difference to my pension if I paid for those 5 years. And they explained deferred benefit, which was the idea that if I left my money in TRA as a rule of 90, it would significantly improve my pension. I want to be clear, no TRA representative advised me which choice to make. They simply gave me the facts and the numbers. Based on that information, each year I rolled over money from my 403b account to my TRA pension. I used the deferred pension rate and determined it was better not than to buy time and to leave my money in TRA until I reached the rule of 90. I paid for both my share annual statement of account lists my deferred retirement as $1,837.58 per month. Today it's $1,736.06. That is $101.52 a month less each month, despite dying back in 5 years. My 2003 annual statement estimated my monthly pension at the rule of 90 to be $2,868.59. Today is estimated at $2,341.31, $527.28 a week less. And that's with buying back 5 years of experience. I know that monthly pension amounts were estimates, but they were estimates I used to plan my future. The cost I will pay each month for the change in the deferred rate matters to me. It will impact me, and since the change was made when I had no other choice to make, it leaves me with the hope that you will support the bill before you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. As I indicated, we're not going to be making a final decision tonight. The commission is going to take all of this under consideration, and we'll be finally deciding that next week.
But should we give this documentation?
You certainly are welcome to leave your documentation with us. She will collect it from you. Thank you very much. Mr. Keith Carlson, wish to be part of us. Mr. Carlson here. Mr. Carlson, did you wish to address us briefly on the documentation issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We appreciate you being here.
Mr. Chairman, members, I have provided information to the chair that I can cancel it for the commission that basically augmentation was frankly overly generous for all of its recent duration. As the members know, at age 56, the rate under the old law went up to 5% annually. You compare that to the service credit that under MSRS or PDRA is 1.7% per year, or TRA 1.9% per year. You can easily find yourself in situations that an individual who quits his or her position at age 56 gets a more generous pension than somebody who continues to work right up to age 66, despite the fact if they happen to be a TRA member that that individual will have, using the example that I provided to the chair, will have contributed an additional $40,000, and the employer contributed an additional $40,000 on that individual's behalf. The example that I provided to the chair showed that the individual who took the deferred compensation would receive a pension at 66 if he or she elects to start receiving at that date of $43,000 annually, a combined five of $50,000 at age 56. Their colleague who continued to work would receive a pension of $42,000, again, despite having contributed $80,000 between him or herself and the employer. Quite frankly, I
situation. And as I mentioned before, for this bill was for us before, we did not have the benefit of representatives from Crookston Township, and Mr. Wright Meyer, who's the retiree. Welcome to the commission, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I am Chair of the Board. I'm one of the supervisors. Share of the interest for those years that
You're a town board member, a township board member, is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm a supervisor.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Moore, in the first couple sentences of your testimony, you said the board knew, the board did not know about the meeting here, the last meeting that we had. I'm looking at a letter from the township clerk that says both Rhett Meyer and his wife, Sue Rhett Meyer, however, were at the meeting. Sue is the township chair. I have a question. I guess the overall question is, don't you folks talk with each other? Do you know, or do you have an opinion as to why the township chair was here to go about the meeting, and the rest of you didn't?
Yes.
Whatever, Mr. Moore.
Excuse me. Sue is Jerry's husband, and she will come down. Jerry is our employee. Sue is our chairman. She's been the township chairman for a number of years. And from what they had told us, we could be an emergency meeting. We felt we had to do this, and we met and discussed what had happened here. And what we were told at that meeting is they did not realize what was going to happen last Tuesday, or that it would have been different. We would have been notified of that. Jerry made the statement that he was running the road grader the night before. It was a Monday night, and that Sue told Tom with him that they'd be there on Tuesday because he expected to be in the board.
Mr. Chairman, that was Mr. Brooks, who's been Mr. DeBoer. Tell me if I'm wrong. What I'm hearing is the Sue and her husband were here seeking something for this legislation that would allow him financial gain. And they were very excited. Mr. Moore?
Yes. As of Tuesday, it's not that we didn't know that they had, that there was a, that it would be pursued a process to get something else done to see if he could qualify for that, those previous years. And as of, we never received them a phone call or anything from them saying that they were coming down here for this. And any information that had been sent to me, I'm not the chair, or Dolores Meyer, Jim, the letter that she had gotten, and in light of the open meeting laws, was going to wait until the next meeting, which is coming up. It's the second Tuesday in the month.
Mr. Chairman, final. Mr. DeBoer, I'm glad you're here today to testify. I just had a trouble with the fact that your township chair knew about the meeting here and didn't tell you all about it.
Thank you. sense was of the board at that point?
Well, Mr. Chairman, to the best of my recollection, that's been a while ago. It's, it had been brought up, and the comment had been made that if we do have to go back, it is going to cost us the township some money. And we realize that. But it isn't to deny Jerry the money for that time for retirement. It is what can be reasonable. And what can we as a township of, we have about 450 residents or people in our township. I don't remember the exact number of residents. It's around 130, 140, something like that. If I put the shoe on the other foot and I had worked for them for that number of years, I also would probably be looking for what am I entitled to and what's fair. So it's not a question of saying, we want to deny that, but we really need to come to something that we can manage and something that's fair.
Is there any record of Mr. Reitmeier asking earlier for this benefit that he was entitled to?
No, not to my knowledge, but I haven't been on the board. I've been on the board for quite a few years. I've been off and on, but nobody on our current board was on the board when Jerry was hired, and a couple of those people are now deceased.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Sloan?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. There's a couple of things that I want to point out in terms of the broader issue here. First of all, as was indicated, the department had one of our association's workshop. In July of 2010, I received a follow-up email from her in August of 2010. Had her directed her to the PRA office. I believe she talked to Mr. Linder there based on the exchange we had at that time. And so, you know, it's very difficult to know what may have occurred 17 years ago, but that's the way a memo for this bill that was prepared for the commission looks like Mr. Reitmeier indicated it may have been some misinformation from PARA, it may have just been misunderstanding. But in any event, there was never any deliberate intent or desire by anybody to violate the statute. The clerk had her own initiative and said, hey, I think we've got a problem, and it was the township that actually initiated the process of correcting the problem with the previous statutory buyback. The policy behind the buyback statute of limitation is a matter of legislative history as to how the legislature decided 3 years to see if we could buy it back, but that is the current policy standard to the township went by it. Just looking very quickly at the policy principles set forth in this commission, I think you can look now at the evidence that you have. If this commission were to decide some amount of buyback is appropriate, I hope you would not adopt any of the proposed amendments that would put a more punitive effect on the township, being that it was, by all estimates, an innocent mistake made 17 years ago, and the township government actually led to the correction of it based on the current law. So, this was the commission to take that into consideration.
Mr. Sloan, I would hope that townships all over understand that the reality here of what's required if they have employees. Can you assure us that the chairmanships do have that now?
The chair members of the commission, we have worked very closely with the PRA. They've been on the road with us for a couple of years. They write more in our article. Part of the difficulty, of course, is that most committees don't have the view of employees. There is still, to this day, some very strong confusion as to when does a contractor become an employee versus an independent contractor. That task is not always a bright line task. And so we do certainly our best, but misunderstandings and mistakes are made. In particular, if you go back 20 years when there wasn't the type of training that we do now, there wasn't the availability of resources that we have now. But by all means, we are doing our best to minimize future exposure and problems with this.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? We need to keep moving here to Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. DeBerg, you mentioned that the township owns the grader.
Yes.
The machine, is that the grader that was Mr. Chair, just for Representative Smith, I just want to say that the late notification to Mr. Reitmeier was my error. I called him last month. But the bill was introduced in May of 2011. And we didn't have early pensions last year, and so that's why. And I explained last week when we introduced the bill that I introduced the bill by request because Representative Leader was first aware of the situation, and then he did not come up. So that was my. I didn't call Mr. Reitmeier until Monday. And he was out on the grader getting the boat. He stopped the grader to talk to me on the boat. And I didn't talk to him about who he should notify or anything like that. Also, that same day I called Mr. Soul. And he called me back. I did not get back to him.
Good, so thank you. Just a comment. I wasn't casting any aspersions on my friend Representative Murphy. Thank you. I was just remarking that I'm somewhat mystified by how a township chair in a very small township can know about a meeting, attend a meeting, and not let his or her buddies know about it. Okay.
So what's that plan for Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, 47 for the 37 for the township under this scenario.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick technical question. Is this the requirement that they take as a certain installment plan? What I'm saying is this something that they have to pay upfront? Is this something that they can pay over a few years' period of time to help them? Or is this a requirement that it's a lump sum?
Is that a good answer to that question?
Thank you.
make it brief if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I am Kathy Longer. I'm here in the person that Mary filed this legislation for. I just want to cover a couple of quick things. I would really pull this up in here, but to answer that question on why the board didn't know that the meeting was here, Mary said, I didn't know until I got one call in the writer. My wife is a township chairman, but she also abstains from anything that has to do with me as an employee. And basically, I got the call from Mary. I called her and asked her to go to town to look at what they asked and be ready when I got out of the grave that night. We came down here. I also have an email from Scott McLeod, that parent, that was sent to our township clerk on February 15th. And it says that she mailed the clerk an actuarial purchase estimate amount of what this was going to cost, and an internet link to the legislation and suggested that they contact our representative with Keel. So I guess they had the opportunity to find the meeting. Mary notified me, and I was lucky, I would not have. The other part of this, I guess, Mr. Solem, after I read your jacket that Mr. Martin put on this thing and explain what an egregious error is, and there is no malice in an egregious error. But I looked up what egregious means in the dictionary, and it says it's remarkably bad. There was no malice here, it was just bad. I live in Pitt, Jackson, and Pitt's in Township 2, and I don't feel a bit good about having to come out here and testify. I'm basically against the town board in this matter. My wife is part of that town board. And these board members are not only my employers, they're my neighbors and they're my friends. And I've always had an excellent working relationship with them. And I can already feel that there's a little stray on that relationship today after we had an emergency meeting yesterday. I guess they feel that the testimony I gave last week was a personal attack on them individually, and nothing could be farther from the truth. I guess that everything I said was true and correct to the best of my knowledge, and I stand by that. There was a mistake. Mr. Solem says this was a mistake, and it was a mistake made by the township, and it wasn't a gracious mistake. It was a huge mistake. And the fact of the mistake that was made was repeated over a 20-year period. I guess that's pretty gracious, and that's what Mr. Martin's definition of having the employer pay the total share. If I want to give you a little background, and over that 20-year period, there have been 15 different members on this five-person township board. There have been 3 clerks, 2 treasurers, and 5 different supervisors. And different supervisors. That's 15 different people that have gone to training through the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I guess I don't blame the Minnesota Association of Townships for some of this, but their training obviously hasn't been working. Over 20 years, with 15 different people, and you make the same mistake for 20 years. I can't see anything but egregious in that. At last week's meeting, you said you have a precedent where if an egregious mistake has been made, the employer can be asked to pay the entire amount due to make the contract work the whole amount. I'm not asking for that. I work a part-time job for the township. My wife is on disability. When I look at the $2,600, I said, I'm going to have to remortgage my house or do something to pay that if I have to. And basically, you're asking me to pay the $18,000 in interest. Mistake that I had no part in. I didn't do that. The township did. It was a mistake that there was no malice. That's how these people were not harming, you know, but it was an egregious mistake. I guess with that said, I'd like to ask, well, at that last meeting also, just like the board has said, we talked about a payment plan, not only for me, but also for the township. And the only way that I can see that we can put this behind us and get caught up with this is to get some kind of insurance we can put all away. I'm asking that this bill that you pass this bill to that effect, or amend this bill to that effect, and pass it on for inclusion in the Amish bill. I'm almost 63 years old, and I really need this to be taken care of now. I guess we've already talked about the
assumptions. And members, I've asked Mr. Martin to prepare an amendment that would change the bill that I and the author of to respond to the concerns that have been raised by the three funds. And so, Mr. Martin, do you want to point that out?
Ended up being in three different amendments. I'm trying to circulate the potential amendments.
6-8, it reverts back to the salary scale assumption that the pension plan consulting actuaries first recommended. And the 27-8 goes to the payroll growth assumption that's saying.
Did you have any additional comments you wanted to make, Mr. Chair? The departure of the director of the state retirement system, not really. It's just what our actuary recommended after doing experience studies. And it would just give us the opportunity to have the tables that we use more as accurate as we can, so we can repeat it our next actuary evaluation.
Okay.
Any questions from commission members? We're not going to take final action, but if you're open to the amendments, then we can get that on the table.
So yeah. We can go over what the everyone's on the same page here. And
okay.
If you want separate motions for each or in one.
I don't think we can do it in one motion. We can do it in one motion.
And
you want to move?
I can move that, but yes.
Representative Murphy.
Excuse me, very interrupting, Mr. Chairman. All these amendments have to do with Article 1.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
When I read Article 1, I thought it had to do with interest rates applied for repayment of refunds.
Well, that is the main issue that's unchanged here. We're talking about the select and ultimate. Going down to 8% in Article 1, then after 10 years it would revert back to 8.5%. But these amendments address the salary growth and employee number growth, salary deals with those assumptions.
So, Mr. Buckman, I'm not proposing to read off the article, I'm just proposing to read off. Yes, but Mr. Chairman, I want to question whether we need to change the interest rates if we adopt a different assumption rate.
Mr. Martin, can you address that question?
And I, Mr. Murphy, as the chair indicated, this is drawn to the salary scale assumption and the payroll growth assumption. Does not address the underlying interest rate assumption. So this is what President Lang and his bill did is change the interest rate assumption and try to reset the salary scale and payroll growth consistent with that lower interest rate assumption. The pension plan administrators didn't think that worked well. They're changing that aspect of it. Was changed in Representative Lang's bill. The salary scale and payroll growth was more than they were willing to agree to. And this would revert to the set of assumptions that they agreed to for salary scale and payroll growth. It does not, these amendments did not address the interest rate assumption or anything that derived from the interest rate assumption change.
I just wanted to get out of the table a response to what the funds have said in terms of their concerns. And so we can set that issue aside. And that's why I think one of this, these amendments to be brought forward. We're not going to take any anything tonight, but it would be helpful to know if there is support for these amendments on the commission.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that 26A and 27 amendments.
The motion is to move the 20A, 26A, and 27A amendments, which are really at the request of our three major funds. Any further discussion? All in favor of those amendments, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Bennigan, I understand you have some suggested things for us to consider. critical one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just in passing, I know I have another issue to talk about later, but I'll just put for you to give you the sign when it's done talking about that. But within your packets, as I understand it, you should have two amendments labeled H2199-23A-29. This is actually the other issue that we're going to talk about. This is not for this particular one, but I presented to you H2199-23A-29, which suggested the pre-retirement interest rate assumption was 7.5%. And then you, Mr. Chairman, brought a bill that had this penultimate column. There's only one other state that uses the penultimate. 48 states use just one rate. In the interest of trying to arrive at some family for having something that's within what the experiences of other states, I brought two amendments for you to consider, one or the other. One of them, rather than having a select and ultimate, simply says, let's not be select 8% rate that's in the anonymous draft go forward as 8% rate without coming back to an ultimate rate in 2021 as currently proposed. The reason for this is that Typically, when we have a proposal before us, I've been around here very long now, inertia is quite a power, and we get not to move things. And so my concern with the selected alternative is that at some point down the road, the contemplation, I believe, is that there would be a study, and the study would perhaps lead to more consideration. It's a question as much as the default. If you decide not to do the study, if you decide not to do anything, what should we do? And as I'm not going to go over my testimony with you from a few weeks ago. You've already heard that and considered it. I appreciated your time that day. As I continue to tell my students, as I continue to tell my friends, we live in a time that's different. I just listened at the Carlson School. I had a lunch today to our state economist, Tom Stinson, for once again to the new normal and the fact we live in a world that isn't like what we had before. And that world also includes having over employment growth because we have a demographic issue before us. And that would also imply that we can expect lower interest rates going forward. The return on capital will be different. The return on labor will be different in this new world that we had before. I think it's wise for you to consider whether or not you really want to have the default be 8.5% in 2021, or if it should be 8%. And that's what's in the, let me double check myself, that is what's in the 23A amendment, the 25A amendment, permits instead a glide path, perhaps. It is not always the easiest thing in the world to make these half percent jumps and have the impact on contributions and so on right away, the impact we have on retirees right away. We understand that. So this gives you the opportunity in the 25A amendment to have a glide path that you go 8.25% beginning July 1, 2012, and then to 8% on July 1, 2014. And that's where we end. So I would ask Commission members to seriously think about whether or not we want somehow the default to be that we return back to some rate in the future, and the future is uncertain. In the last 10 years, has provided nowhere near that rate, or even the one that's being proposed now. But instead, they have that number be at a smaller gradation lower, and then have your study and have some thought about that. And with that, I would take questions.
settle it tonight, but you have a couple other ideas on the table here that I can help.
Mr. Chairman, I think I should go to 8 for 5 years and then go back to 8.5, so that's another.
That would be another option. That would be another option.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in reading from the TRA here, it says it's not prudent to change benefit calculation factors frequently or promptly when members rely upon these calculations for benefit estimates for retirement planning. I think the same thing goes for the funds. I think that Representative Bain's approach of being reported down to 8 and then leaving it there. I think for all the reasons they mentioned are very good, but that's exactly it. I think this, it's much better to have a step it down and then go forward in that, especially when I don't think that the returns in the future are going to be quite as generous. I think this is a more reasonable approach, but I like the stepping down instead of going properly.
Want to give the funds an opportunity at some point to indicate they've indicated before that they will have supported and like the ultimate selective ultimate. If the funds have any comments they want to make on these other two or three alternatives, we welcome that input as well. Ms. Hagen.
Original.
It would be original.
Thank you. Let's see, one other person, Mr. McKee, wanted to address this in his grand assumption. Welcome to the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This evening as a former member of the Pension Commission, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I would concur with the statements earlier from Representative Pinion. As a 30-year business owner in the state of Minnesota, as a 16-year member of the legislature, there's a new norm out there, and it's time that we recognize that new norm. And the economy is not going to be in the future what we've seen in the past, and I think it's absolutely critical that you take under consideration reducing this number. And I think, certainly what the chair has recommended is at least a moderate position as a true fiscal conservative. I would say that 7.5 is probably more realistic, maybe even lower. I think if you look at what the realities are today, I don't think the economy is going to come roaring back, and we're going to see rates of return anywhere near what we've seen in the past. So again, leave it to the deliberation and the wisdom of the commission. But again, ladies and gentlemen, I think that the reality is going forward, the rates of return are going to be much lower than we've seen in the last 10 years, probably lower than we've seen in the 20 years. And as someone who was on the commission and voted to move this 8.5, I think I regret that vote today. So, anyway, I'll leave that to your deliberations. But again, I think it needs to be lower, and I think it needs to be lower and lower, and let future commissions determine when and if it should be raised. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Craigie. I'm glad to know you're the original originator of the idea.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't say I was the originator. I said I made an errant vote many years ago.
I admire people who are willing to admit their errors. Any other discussion on Article 1, Mr. Martin? Any other points to be made here on Article 1 that
good time to do this. What we need, especially this is a major issue, whether the 8% ultimate select or some of that, these are all sections of this bill that reflect that decision. I think we should make that decision first and then line up the rest of the bill to go along with it. I really think it should at least wait for the rest of the members of the commission. We've told them they're not going to be actions. This is probably one of the key parts of this bill this year. And I think to act on it right now would probably not a very good idea. I think we should first make that decision, and then the rest of the bill should fall through.
Sure, that was.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, I'm fine if Congress and Timber wants to hold up, but I really don't think it is that significant, because I think whatever changes we make, the perspective of leaving the is assumption the same at 8.5%. I mean, very sensitive to this issue of when people are promised things. We've had that discussion before. People come in and say, you told me I was going to get this amount. Now you made changes, and I don't know how it's going to run, and now I'm not going to get this amount. So let's be very cautious in making any kind of promises that we're not going to be able to do in the future. So I think adopting these amendments would be consistent with the overpromise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I agree with you in some of those approaches. I think it does have an effect, though. One of the big things is this is going to cause, this being removed will cause the beneficiaries to have to pay more. So if we leave it at 8% and follow some of what is here, it will cost the funds. But it's going to be the retirees or those who have a beneficiary situation here. By leaving it at 8.5%, they have to pay more. And I think if it's just that we just had another case right now of somebody being used 8.5%, that they have to pay back with the township or so on and so forth. And so there's just kind of a consistency here. I just think it needs more discussion, more thought. You may be right. I just don't think it's an action we should do that openly. I think having a great discussion about it. And I think it makes the point that I say, though, is that, you know, let's do it and do it, because this fluctuating, these changes, we am sympathetic to them. And so that's why I don't care for the ultimate and select, because we've got that going on and that uncertainty going on. If you line them up together, I think it can work right. As far as this particular language here, I'm sensitive to that. But you just have to remember that where the funds being retirees or beneficiaries are making those payments.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, that was the whole point of the 2010 reform, is that in order to save the funds, money, everybody has to pay more. So I'm kind of surprised at what you're saying, Representative Meyer, because the idea is, yes, everyone has to pay more in order to keep these funds solvent.
Mr. Chairman, in regards to 2010, I think it was seen across the board in that sort of way. I just think that we'll just have some more time to discuss, take a look at it. I just might come around your way, Senator.
is great, as reflected in 28A, can be a separate issue from the earnings assumption that we're talking about, right? And that they aren't necessarily connected or related. And to that extent, I guess I'm open to doing this, whether we do it now tonight or next Tuesday. I'm open to these two amendments.
Same kind of argument with Amendment 29A as well. That's a real actual benefit calculation. How do we reduce benefits to provide for time survivor benefits and how do we retirement reductions? We'd like to separate that also from the investment earnings assumption so that we're not looking at that assumption to make our actual benefit calculations for that. And to make it this much, then it's going to be lower for 5 or 10 years. Then it's going to go back up again. That makes financial planning difficult. It makes the calculation process difficult. That's what connection doesn't need to be there. There are times where we need to change those reduction factors and those equivalency tables of the client to a fluctuating interest rate and create some real problems. And people like you heard this morning, Laura, who earlier this afternoon will be able to come and tell their story about how things change.
But we're being, I indicated that I'm optimistic in doing these two. Is it okay with you if we hold off on that until next time to give a request on that? Okay. If there's nothing else on Article 1, let's at least get started on Article 2. Start.
Jerry Noble is in two American targets for Article 2. Article 2 is a stack hybrid arrangement which covers your regular compensation, primarily overtime, having that be covered by the classified employees, which the defined contribution plan primarily, and leaving the defined benefit plans for everything other than the regular compensation amounts.
Here's at least one person who really has chance to be able to testify with regard to this issue, Mr. Gary Amoroso. Welcome to the commission. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Gary Amoroso, the executive director of the Minnesota Association of Food Administrators. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I know the time is running away, so I just want to make a few very brief statements in regards to some concerns that we have with the year-end compensation conversation. From our understanding, approximately $72 million are provided to the TRA fund every year from employees involved in the extracurricular areas. In the school district, we're talking about everything from coaching, being involved with the arts, trauma debate, all different types of activities. We also understand that about $7.6 million are contributed to the TRA fund by the teachers and by other school district employers. If this provision were to be included and was adopted, we would have a loss of funds for the TRA. We've been talking over the course of the evening about the future. And we would suggest that it would be worth considering having a lesser appetite to look at reducing the revenue as we're in the TRA. One of the possible unintended consequences of this type of action could create additional costs to school systems. If we have to look at different ways of funneling employee dollars, it could cause us to need additional staff. And it just might be another unfunded mandate that at this point school systems simply cannot benefit in any more. With that, I appreciate this opportunity and stand for questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Amoroso? Thank you very much. Mr. Muslim, you wish to speak to this issue? You know, what I have is that there were several items of interest. Mr. Munstrom. He's okay, he's on the list, I see. Okay. Mr.
Mr. Chair, at the time that this issue was first introduced, there were some questions about why it was just for educators. And for the other plans, it was just charity. And the more we talked about it, the more I thought and we heard testimony of the difficulty in making this work. And I suggested that we have interim study on this issue, but I think it is an issue that needs more than one plan, more than for one plan. And if we can take the interim study, then it should be a process for all the plans. All the money, the variety of money that people have, and I don't think this time has come.
So you're suggesting maybe if we want to pursue this, that we do a study very narrow?
To give more testimony and more ideas on how we could administer it.
If there's some interest in that, we should probably get some language then that we can consider next time, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chair, I just want to concur that I could also be told that this has difficult with the administration. And, you know, whenever you're making kind of major changes like this, you really have to think of a lot of things, a lot of monetary consequences that could result. So I think it's best to be in the study.
The representative,
Mr. Chairman, those two things.
Representative
Kimmler. Mr. Chair, I think I would be included other things that I've heard the administrative thing, and another way to do that is to have it applied to all plans, not just some of them. And so I think that also, from what I heard in testimony, would also ease the administrative simplification of the process. And also the effective date to give them time.
Okay.
I can prepare that for you as well.
Okay. And if you were you offering the workbook this morning on an amendment here? Okay. We will we'll look forward to that then being ready for us to consider next time.
Now,
anything else, Senator Dibble?
I have two amendments to consider.
Or not.
are certainly open to an amendment. I would call for further study on this, and not just with one fund, but with all the funds. I think there have been enough questions raised here that I'm not sure we're to the point where we can settle that within a week here. And I hear that. And so if anybody wants to work on an amendment that would convert this to a study, let's have that before us. I wanted to also report that since we had a lot of testimony on the Driscoll bill, and he has continued to work on this with Ms. Vanek, and that issue has been brought down to a study. Ms. Bart, would you give a report on
this? Yes, there is in Packet 1, this should be Amendment 8A. This would delete the various sections that reset the salary threshold for ERA general and other ERA plan membership, and provides for ERA to do a study of updating that threshold figure. This is a one-page amendment, the 8K amendment. It requires the ERA to identify various options with the financial and economic impacts of plans, the employers, and the employees, and to submit recommendations of the various options and report to the Pension Commission by February 15th, 2013.
So everybody's aware of that. Since there was a lot of testimony on that issue at the last meeting. Well, members, we still have a fair way to go here, but we're past our point of an hour. And I would ask for everyone's commitment to stay as long as we need to next Tuesday to get through this and get it done. And if everybody's agreeable to that, we can adjourn for the night. Otherwise, maybe we need to keep working tonight.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Did you just want us to look at this, or?
Just wanted you to be aware of it, that because of all the that's an article, what would we get out of Article 6, I think it is. It's an Article 6, so I just wanted to call it to your attention. Representative Banyan, you have one other issue. Let's get that on the table here tonight before we adjourn.
Let me call your attention to two amendments that should be in your packet. These are amendments 24A and 31A. These reflect language of House File 2264. Senator Chamber, I see, is on the right now. He is helping us on the Senate side with that particular item. House File 2264 asks for a way to provide reporting on on our pensions. In particular, with a focus, as you'll see, on I'm going to find the line because I was thinking we were leaving now. But on annual required contribution, this is an attempt to try to give to people of Minnesota a very clear way in which they can see whether or not our state is meeting its obligations to it. Current and future IRAs. I discovered in your office, a simple page looks like this that has for each of the funds in the state of West Virginia
64 in a form where what we would ask for is information it looks like, something like what we have here. If you try to read, let's say, what our requirements are now, you can find a page that the one from the State Board of Investment looks like this. This is on the State Auditor's website. You got to take about 3 clicks to find your way there, and then you've got to go to page 32. That's a bit of digging, and I would think that in the interest of transparency of our pension plans, we would like to have that kind of information more readily available. The bill calls, and it refers to 16A, which is an instruction to MMB to ask them to place this report, this single page, on their website, which I believe would be a place where people would go. It's not automatic, but you would take to go to the auditor's website to find this information. Or, for those of you who are really into fascinating evening plan reading through a paper statement. The differences between 24A and 31A are something 31A added 2 lines as a request for additional information that we believe we would be able to use to do some of this to her a few weeks ago when we talked about the difference between a time-weighted return and a money-weighted return. We have someone who's willing to do some work on that with us, but we need access to some data that, again, is not readily available without apparently a good bit of data. So we added that request in 31A, and Mr. Burrick, it's my point in the day, and I apologize, but I don't know which lines that request appears on or what it goes to.
The difference between the two is that the dash 31A has a clause added on the lines, there's 2 lines, 9 and 10.
Well, thank you.
That language does not appear in the
document. Mr. Burke,
is that, Mr. Church, is that the only difference between these two members? That's the only difference.
So that's why there are two versions, and at the request of the first line, it is coming. I'm asking for your support of the 31A, if you should find that data is somehow something that's not to be made available, I would ask your support of 24A. 24A again is now filed 2264. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk a bit about that during an earlier session, but I wanted to make sure that was on the table available to you. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Representative Pena. Some members you have met as an idea to consider when we get together next week. Any other things?